don't have a quorum, we'll call one when we get one, but in the meanwhile, Reps and Brocklo, or do we have a quorum now?
Not yet.
Not yet. So in the meanwhile, Reps and Brocklo...
The mics are... I'm not hearing the mics. Are they on?
Yep.
Okay. In the meanwhile, Reps and Brocklo, if you want to explain your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. House File 2037 comes from... Representative McElpatrick, and in the opportunities to tour the state and visit some of the districts, we met with some individuals who were involved in community education programs in the Aiken County area. And what happened was, is it turns out in state statute, we actually mandate school districts to spend money when, even though they don't want to. And I can turn this over to Mr. Strom and Mr. Crow to kind of lay out the legislative history of where this came from, and they can talk a little bit about the bill, and then I'll highlight my motivations for the bill.
Mr. Strom.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Garofalo, in 2001, the legislature passed a series of fund balance limitations on three of the largest funding sources in the Community Service Fund. Those were on the School Readiness Program, the Community Education Funding Program, and the ECFE program. Essentially, what the state does since those fund balance limitations have been put in place is measure each district's revenue over a three-year period, and if the revenue in the fund balance is 25% or greater of the district's revenue, then the district's revenue is offset in the following year. So essentially what happens is if a school district runs a fund balance greater than 25% of the program revenue, the district loses revenue in the following year. And those three programs were ECFE, community education, and school readiness.
Representative Groffel, we have members, first we have a quorum right now, so I will call the meeting to order. And Representative Enzels, have you read the minutes?
Yes, I have.
All right.
Everything is...
Okay, Representative Van Zels moves approval of the minutes. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. The minutes are approved. And Representative Brocklo, he's also got candy up here that I'm planning to eat too. And Representative Brocklo, now you can officially move your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I will move House File 2037 for possible inclusion in a later bill. And so, I do, Mr. Strom and Mr. Crow, I do not see a fiscal note in the packet. Was that, you're pulling it up right now? Okay, so if staff maybe wants to try to get a copy of that, we'll give it to the pages to make copies of it. So there is a fiscal impact on this because some districts are impacted by this penalty, and so we can distribute that to the committee. But basically, from my perspective, is we should not be forcing school districts to spend money on things they don't want to. The interaction and the when I was up in the Aiken School District was they're actually saving it for a larger project and a larger endeavor they wanted to use later on. And it just made no sense that we would penalize local school districts for being fiscally responsible. So, Madam Chair, members, that's my motivation for bringing the bill forward, and I would invite any questions and comments. I do want to tell you, Madam Chair, I am getting a bad headache and some flashbacks from this committee seeing you up there and here. So I don't know how long I can go on with this, but Madam Chair, that concludes my testimony. We did have a testifier who actually drove from Wilmer yesterday and wanted to testify in this bill. That I don't think they had the opportunity to come today, but hopefully that member of the public can. Or did you come?
Yes.
All right. Well then, Madam Chair, that concludes my presentation, but I'm open to looking at
all right. Representative Brocklo, the fiscal note is ready. Would you like to have that discussed first or hear from the testifier?
Yes, Madam Chair, if we could discuss it, and then if someone's printing it and copying it right now, then members can have that before them, but I think we can discuss it right now. I do not have a copy of it in front of me, though.
All right, so the testifier then, who would like to testify for the bill? Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record. In case 10,000 years from now we're trying to remember who you were.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Steve Brisendine. I'm the Community Education and Recreation Director for the Wilmer Public Schools in the City of Wilmer.
Welcome.
And well, time flies because yesterday I think it was 100 years, so getting out there ways. I'm here to support and speak in favor of House File 2037. Repealing the fund balance penalty to community education programs. The impact of this has been felt in greater Minnesota, much more so than in the metro area, mainly because of the size of budgets. Representative Garofalo is exactly right that In many cases, communities were saving dollars because limited dollars. It might be a $50,000 budget, and 25% of that is your fund balance cap, and it makes it difficult for small districts to accumulate dollars to do larger programs that create a bigger impact. So I would speak in favor of this. I think the law has had a negative impact in the smaller school districts due to the small revenue streams that they have. And I think that's especially true in the early childhood family ed and school readiness programs that are much smaller than the general community education programs. I think changing this would allow districts to have a better planning process. Community education has revenue streams that come from all over the place, and at any given time, a program might be quite successful based upon population involvement, and that creates a revenue source for that year and allows for you to have cap space, but in the next year, you might not have that same revenue stream, and thus your revenue goes down and your cap space decreases as well. So I think the ebbs and flow of how you do community education business is impacted by this fund balance penalty law, and I think it would be a good move if we were to eliminate this, especially for Greater Minnesota, because I think, as I looked at the last run on districts that were impacted, 85% plus of those districts are in Greater Minnesota versus in Metro Minnesota. So I guess in closing, I would just say that I think this would allow us to be more successful because community education is based on each community that is working within the program areas. They all do things differently, and this law accumulates everybody doing things somewhat the same, and community education in every district should be different based upon the community needs, and I would support House File 2037. In closing, I guess I would stand for questions, and thank you for allowing me this moment.
Thank you very much, and I think Representative Peterson does have a question. Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Garofalo, and this may be a question for you as well. Just generally, do you want to get into why the penalty exists in the first place or what the rationale is?
I think maybe Mr. Strom or Mr. Crow can talk about why this antiquated and outdated statute was put into existence.
Madam Chair, Representatives Garofalo and Peterson, the fund balance penalty was put in essentially after there had been a concerted effort to increase the amount of or restore some funding in the community education program. And part of the rationale, and again, you know, people have different views about whether these are proper or not, but the rationale that the legislature was using at the time was that if legislators were going to increase the amount of funding for community education, they wanted those programs to spend that revenue and not just to bank that revenue. So at the time, that was the rationale. In the early years of the penalty, there were some relatively substantial amounts of amount that was recaptured, so the state also essentially received a benefit from it. The fiscal note that we're copying at the moment shows that for fiscal year 15, the impact would only be about $45,000 statewide. So the impact is now negligible. So essentially, those districts that had large fund balances have now spent those down. So the result of the fund balance penalty being in place for a number of years is that there aren't real large balances left in school district fund balances. Yeah, and I should add that is on the aid side. There is a levy issue as involved as well, and we'll see that when the fiscal note gets distributed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That'll be enough.
All right. Any other questions from members? Any other testimony then? Thank you very much. Any other testimony in favor of the bill? Mr. McHenry?
Madam Chair, members, Kevin McHenry from the Department of Education. I don't know if I'm coming up here to say in favor or against. There were a couple points I just did want to raise. Definitely appreciate the the efforts. I know that our districts are experiencing some difficulties in having some flexibility within their accounts is something that's very important. One of the discussions that came up here that I just wanted to make sure that we got on the table is kind of related is there was a 2001 OLA report. It was a program audit regarding ECFE. And one of the findings was that that a quarter of the districts at the time, this was in 99, had more than 100% of their annual ECFE revenues in reserve. And so I think one of the suggestions from that OLA report was to put in, was to find a mechanism to put in place to encourage spending on these specific programs. Because ECFE is a program that is universal throughout all districts. After this, after the report was out, it said it recommended that they restricted ECFE funding for districts whose reserve fund balances exceed a certain level, eliminating or reducing the statutorily guaranteed minimum funding levels for districts with under 150 eligible children, or allocating a portion of ECFE funds based on the actual number of persons served, not just the size of the eligible population. At the time, I think what they were saying is small districts with large reserves of unspent funds tended to provide fewer ECFE services than similarly sized districts with smaller reserves. And I guess with that, it's just wanted to raise the issue for those specific programs of why that was put in place. And as you all are debating this bill, it's just to put that on the table for you all to consider.
Thank you very much. Questions, members? Thank you. Any other testifiers for the bill or anyone against the bill?
Concerns with the bill, Madam Chair. Concerns.
Anybody strongly opposed to Representative
Garofalo? Representative Garofalo.
All right.
Once again, the Erickson Gryling team teams up again. Huh? Now it's all coming back to me.
And Representative Garofalo, do you have the fiscal note yet?
Not yet.
Okay.
I mean, I've read it at my inbox, but I don't have a copy of it.
Okay, we'll wait till that gets passed out. And in the meanwhile, Representative Garofalo, if you have any comments. You can fill the time, otherwise we'll wait.
Were there any other testifiers? Okay. So, no, I think I certainly understand the motivations for why this was originally enacted. However, we can let our local officials decide when they need to spend money and when they don't. Mandating that they spend the money is not sound budgeting. In many respects, the money will be spent on the programming. It's a matter of timing. Again, particularly in smaller school districts, they're saving it up for a larger project or larger initiative. And we're actually prohibiting and hindering them from having the ability to do this. We're all smart, but as Governor Dayton likes to say, none of us are smarter than all of us, or something like that. I don't know. But so I think it gives us an opportunity. You can see in the fiscal note, it outlines the aid cost, but also if Mr. Strom and Mr. Crow want to explain what the levy interaction would be with this proposal, or I can explain it.
Mr. Crow.
Madam Chair and members, since these programs are a mix of aid and levy, when there's the fund balance adjustment can be made, a portion of it can be levy. The allocation of the levy reduction to a specific year is extremely complicated. Suffice it to say, if you look on page 3, under local government costs, levy adjustments forecast at 13,000 in 14 and 7,000 in fiscal 15, so in addition to the 45,000 in aid, a pretty small levy adjustment. And then the expenditure or revenue formulas shows in each area, community ed, ECFE, and school readiness, kind of a context of how much money is in the program and how small the fund balance adjustments have been recently.
Any questions on the fiscal note, members? All right. Representative Garofalo, any closing comments other than what you just made?
No. Thank you, Madam Chair. And I renew my motion to have House File 2037 laid over for possible inclusion in a later bill.
All right. So House File 2037 is laid over for possible inclusion. Thank you, Chair Garofalo, and I'll turn it back to you.
Well, actually, Madam Chair, I might as well just crank this one out, too. We're having an informational hearing on House File 2433.
All right. Would you like to move that bill?
It's actually not before the committee, so I can't move it. So it's just mostly informational.
So informational
for members.
Hearing. Go ahead, Chair Garofalo.
Thank you. And so, members, what that bill does is currently the so-called legacy amendment deposited 19.75% of an additional sales tax into the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund. And when you read the language of the amendment, it says that the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund may be spent only for arts education, and arts access to preserve Minnesota's history and cultural heritage. And Madam Chair, members, regardless of individual members' opinions on the constitutional dedication of an additional sales tax, I know the Chair and I actually were in agreement on this issue when we went through the legislative process. with regards to whether it should be on the ballot or not. Outside of that, that is in the Constitution. It's happening right now. And if you take a look at the general fund right now, roughly just over 40% of the general fund is dedicated to education. And my belief is that within just the 19.75% portion of the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund, that sort of dedication should be made to education as well, for music instruments, for enhancement of arts programming, and to put that statutory definition in place to mirror what is happening in our general fund. Again, Madam Chair, members, this bill is not before our committee, so it's an informational hearing that I had authored and wanted to make sure the committee had a robust discussion on this before it starts off in the Legacy Committee. And Madam Chair, and I have no testifiers, Madam Chair.
All right. Are there any testifiers on the bill that are for or against this proposal? Since this is the Education Committee, this is hope. Representative Dorman, welcome to the committee. State your name.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I thought this was an important piece of legislation, and I felt compelled to testify. It's a good thing.
Madam Chair, I got $5 as Representative Dorman doesn't know what this bill is.
See, I'll take that bet.
But he's always welcome.
I'll take that bet because I think that, you know, if you do build up strong reserves, why should you be penalized for that? I'm very much in favor of it.
You're 2 minutes late, Representative Dorman.
Oh, yeah, that's the story of my life.
Representative Dorman, would you like to talk about the Dorman-Greiling Amendment?
That was a quality. The Greiling-Dorman Amendment was a quality piece of bipartisan legislation that I think should be a model for others to follow. And I'm proud to work with you on it.
I heartily agree. That's wonderful.
There you go.
It's great to see you.
Well, thank you for letting me interrupt you.
All right, anybody else that would like to testify for or against this?
Oh, you owe me $5, Dan.
Can I have $5?
Okay. Then any questions or comments from the members? Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Garofalo, I kind of like this. Can you tell me would the revenue go towards all schools in the state of Minnesota? I mean, how do you expect to spread the revenue out?
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, Representative Ward, the language they put in this bill reads, at least 40% of the annual spending from the Arts and Cultural Heritage Fund must be spent on programs that directly benefit children enrolled in public and non-public schools. So it certainly afford for quite a bit of flexibility. From a financial jurisdiction, that would still within the House be over the Legacy Committee. They would decide that. Whether that was a new categorical aid, whether it was a grant program for music instruments, whether it was a matching grant program to supplement and enhance arts and music teachers, those are things I deliberately left out of the statutory change to give the most flexibility and to impose the least amount of intimidation on the Legacy Committee.
Thank you.
I have a question. Representative Garofalo, do you know approximately what percent is now being spent on the category that you were proposing to put into statute? I heartily endorse this, and I wish it had been a suggestion when we first got the money. You know how hard it is once we have the money to pry it out of the hands of someone else. And I'm wondering what percentage of this 40% would need to be pried out of someone else's hand.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, we took a look at the legacy grants have, they haven't been around forever. The amendment was just passed in 2008. So it's difficult because, for example, if you have a grant that goes to the Children's Museum, how do you categorize that? So the reporting that's currently coming out of the legacy funds does not differentiate between what is spent on children and what is not. And so sometimes it's in the eye of the beholder, and there's a lot of discrepancies or a lot of opinions on how much is being spent. I would feel comfortable saying that it's nowhere near 40%.
That would be my guess too. Any other questions or comments or robust discussion from this committee? Representative Woodard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Garofalo, I like this bill a lot as well. How do we, this would not supplant existing programs, though, however, right? Thank you.
Representative Garofalo.
Yeah, Madam Chair and Representative Woodard, that is the Constitution specifically states with this amendment that it cannot supplant funds. So there's a lot of discretion there in terms of how those funds would be appropriated, but additional salary enhancements to arts and music teachers would not be supplanting. Additional benefits or more generous benefits would not be supplanting. Additional musical instruments, new repair of existing instruments, all new services and functions would clearly not be supplanting. So there's a lot of flexibility there, Representative Woodard, and what we could do.
Anyone else? Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Chair Garofalo, what does Representative Erdahl think about this?
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, Senator Peterson, Representative Peterson, I have not had extensive conversations with Representative Erdahl on that, and I would allow him to offer his own opinion on it.
Yeah, well, I think it's a great idea. I think I agree with everyone here. I just was curious. So thanks.
Thank you very much. I'm sure we would all like to be the mouse in the corner for that discussion, right, Representative Peterson?
He's my office neighbor, so maybe I'll ask.
Yeah, you can have a pre-conversation.
I think it will be free.
Any other discussions? Otherwise, thank you, Representative Grapple, for bringing forward an interesting idea. I think you've got your easiest audience in this committee.
Madam Chair, I think you're right. Yeah. Thank you.
Representative Mariani, you have a bill to move?
I do. Good afternoon, Mr. Chair members.
Good afternoon. Representative Mariani, it'd be the intent of the chair to lay this bill over for possible inclusion in the future.
Well, Mr. Chair and Mr. Chair, I'm wondering if maybe we can talk about that very quickly. I think the obviously, you know, the will of the chair here. Initially, the concern with this bill was that it might generate a fiscal note. I don't believe that's the case. We don't have a definitive back from the department on that. But we are talking about a fixed appropriation, and we're talking about, quite frankly, rare instances. I would be hard pressed to think that the department is going to incur any kind of meaningful costs. And so I guess I'm speaking to both chairs at this point, just in terms of just some direction here. Seems to me the easiest thing to do, given that, would be to send it to the floor, but certainly if something were to pop up, we could always bring it back from the floor.
At this time, I'd like Greg Crow to comment on the bill.
Mr. Chair, members, the fiscal note would essentially, if there were one, would be on the department's side in terms of additional staff time if necessary, but there's no change in the cap. Adult basic education is a capped revenue program, and so as a result, this would be potentially moving money between programs and consortia under the cap, but it would not affect the overall level of funding. So there's no state aid cost to the bill. The fiscal effects, if any, would be at the Department of Education level for administrative purposes.
So, Mr. Chair, I would seek some direction from the chairs at this point. I think the easiest path would be just to simply send this as a simple bill to the House floor. I don't think there's any major contribution.
At this time, I'd like to invite Mr. McHenry to the testimony chair.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members, Kevin McHenry from the Department of Education. I think Mr. Strom hit on the points there. I don't. I think we were reviewing this, and I think if something comes out due to this being a capped program, that this isn't something that would have a cost at the department. If there was a cost, it could be something incurred on possibly the local level.
Thank you, Mr. McHenry. Representative Mariani, that being the case, then you're free to make your motion on the bill at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I will move that House File 2291 be recommended to pass and referred to the General Register on the floor.
Thank you. You can start your testimony.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chair. And my apologies to both chairs. I should have checked earlier in terms of what the proper motion was going to be here today. This bill involves the Adult Basic Education Program, and it basically creates an exemption and a process to hold harmless on contact hours those programs whose attendance is negatively affected by service disruptions, which are defined in the bill as being circumstances that are beyond the control of the program. Natural disasters, for instance, and transportation, and I think one other disruption. As we'll go through the bill, I'll explain that. There's nothing in the bill that automatically does this. It calls for a program to make the case to the Department of Education. The department then would develop a threshold for determining when would be an appropriate exemption or level of for granting an exemption. Programs would have to show that contact hours would be disrupted, that they would have to explain what the cause is. They would also have to show that they've taken steps to mitigate the loss of those contact hours. Let's see what else. This is a statewide bill. You can imagine I had a brief conversation with Representative Fabian a week ago, and you know his area is historically prone to all sorts of natural disruptions, flooding in particular. And he also has represents communities that do deliver AB services. And many of you know that, particularly in some of our smaller towns in the state, AB services are important for their own sake, but they're also important for the economic activities of those communities, as many of folks involved in AB services form an important part of many of our retail activities, service sector activities in those communities. Obviously, it's a big deal as well in St. Paul, the district I represent, that runs a fairly large ABE program. So members, with that, I'm gonna stop. I'm gonna ask Mr. Tom Citrin-Heisen to speak more to this bill. We did have someone from Greater Minnesota, but Sally apparently is not gonna be able to join us here today, but hopefully Tom can also not only speak to the East Metro St. Paul issues, but also to the Greater Minnesota issues. And I think you also share that this bill has support from the statewide consortium.
If you'd please state your name. Sure. And who you represent.
Mr. Chair, committee members, I'm Tom Citrin-Heisen, and I represent Literacy Action Network, which is a statewide professional adult basic education advocacy group. And we are definitely endorsing this bill from a statewide perspective. I'd like to start by very briefly talking about what adult basic education is, which is administered through approximately 48 statewide consortia, provides a variety of English language instruction, basic skill building, GED preparation, citizenship, and career preparation services. And the funding formula provides a guaranteed network of ABE services throughout the state so that all communities have the opportunity to benefit from those services. So what this bill would do is that would protect that statewide delivery mechanism in cases of unavoidable service disruptions. What can happen if there is a disaster such as a flood or a tornado or something that closes down a program for a period of time or interferes with people's ability to attend is their contact hours go down significantly that year. The following year's revenue is based on the contact hour revenue and cannot increase more than 8% in a given year for any region. So if somebody has, for instance, a 20% decrease in hours because of a flood, they will never make that money up. Under the current situation, their funding would go down significantly that year, and they could only, even if they had a huge influx of learners that returned to the next year, they could only get a small bit of that revenue back every year. A number of programs have experienced natural disasters in the last few years. A few examples are Minneapolis had a tornado last year. Moorhead had devastating floods in 1997 and 2007 and smaller floods last year. Thief River Falls in the Red River Valley, flooding in 1997, had their program closed for over a month, and they tell me it took quite a long time for their students to be able to return to their classes. Wadena Pelican Rapids had a tornado 2 years ago, and several of these programs did indeed ask the Department of Education for some sort of an adjustment, and their determination was that under current statute there was no way they could make that adjustment, so there was nothing they could do. So basically what this bill would do is it would set a hold harmless level of funding. If a consortium lost more than 10% of their contact hours or an individual program within a consortium more than 15%, and that would be no more than the average of their contact hours, I believe, for the previous 2 years. So they're not increasing their money. They're just keeping a hold harmless for 1 year while their program has time to recover from the problem. We've been asked about why can't the legislature make adjustments after the fact. The problem is that revenue might come 2 years later, so the program has already suffered significantly, and the number of adult learners who are able to benefit from the program has gone down quite a lot. I want to emphasize also that while this bill could be very important for an individual region of the state so they didn't lose the ability to deliver a good level of services, even by reallocating the additional money, it would have a very, very slight effect on the state as a whole, you know, a couple of cents per contact hour at the most. Also, this reallocation, these adjustments are not automatic. They would go through the Department of Education. The commissioner would have a chance to investigate through their staff and determine whether some sort of an adjustment was necessary. So I would just like to thank you for considering this bill, and if you have any questions, I would be glad to try to respond.
Mr. Heisen, I'm familiar with some of the examples you put forward. Do you have any ballpark dollar figures for the impacts on any of these examples?
No, I'm sorry, we don't. I didn't get to that level of analysis of the individual programs going back, you know, a number of years. But I am told it would be really very slight in the overall scheme of things, but very important to the local program.
Well, thank you. Are there any questions for the Representative Fabian?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mariani, and thank you for bringing this bill forward. I think it's a good bill to make sure that we get before the committee, and I would encourage people to support your proposal. Thank you.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and thank you, Representative Mariani, for bringing this forth. We didn't hear it in policy, but I think on behalf of the policy committee, I can say we would support this. So thank you, and I will sign on to it later.
Is there anyone from the public or any other person would like to testify? Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Valerie Doslin, and I represent the Minnesota Community Ed Association. And I can't recall if I heard it during the testimony, but just wanted to make sure the members know that MCA supports this legislation, and we thank Representative Mariani and the other legislators for their efforts.
Well, thank you. Are there any other people who wish to testify for or against this bill? Seeing none, public testimony is closed. Is there any further questions from the members? Then, Representative Mariani, would you like to renew your motion?
Mr. Chair, I would renew the House File 2291, be recommended to pass, and refer to the general legislature.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. Ayes have it.
Thank you, motion Mr. Chair, passes. Members.
Representative Erickson, you have a bill before the committee. Would you like to make a motion?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I move Senate File 946, the unofficial engrossment, to be before us. And I guess because we're still working with Education Minnesota, I would recommend we lay it over so that some agreement can be made on the language so we don't have to have this discussion on the floor. And, Mr. Chair, I do have the 8-5 amendment. So I would like to move that 8-5 amendment to the unofficial engrossment.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion passes.
And Mr. Chair, I might have spoken a little too quickly because I would like to delete on the amendment lines 1.3 and 1.4 and then move an oral amendment to the unofficial engrossment, which would be on line 113. Delete the verb consult and insert collaborate. So perhaps, Mr. Chair, we could consider the deletion on the A5 and my oral amendment in the same vote.
Representative Sreiling, do you have any comment on this?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I don't have any real comment, but I was just commenting in my snide little way to Representative Kelly. What's the difference between consult and collaborate?
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Greiling. It was a request from Education Minnesota.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Erickson, Mr. Chair.
And if you
Can
you restate the motion?
Surely. My oral amendment is to delete on the A5 amendment for which we just voted, lines 1.3 and 1.4, and then maybe we have to do this separately. I think we have to do this separately because it's an amendment and an unofficial engrossment. So let's vote on that, please, Mr. Chair. I should have done that in the previous motion. And so maybe I should withdraw my former motion accept the A5 amendment, and I'll do that, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Chair, if you'd move to have the amendment reconsidered and then pull that off, and then we'll amend the amendment and put
Thank
it back
you,
on.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I move to reconsider my previous motion, so we have to vote on that, and then I'll make my changes.
All those in favor of reconsidering the previous motion, signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, nay. Ayes have it.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Erickson.
So now I'll place before you the A5 amendment with the deletion of lines 1.13 and 1.14.
Representative Erickson.
And my explanation for that is I have an oral amendment that has been agreed to by interested parties.
Representative Erickson, for clarification, were you also intending to add in 1.13 the verbal change?
No, Mr. Chair, I think this has to be separate because we're dealing with an amendment and we're dealing with an unofficial engrossment. And I don't know, maybe staff can direct me, but...
Mr. Chair, I think what would be easiest, Representative Erickson, is just to amend what you have on line 1.13 and 1.14, and that'll put it in the same place. And Ms. Larson has that ready to go if you'd like
you
her to read
much.
That.
That will simplify it. I appreciate that.
Ms. Larson. Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, members, on the document S0946, A5, page 1, line 3, delete page 1, line 3, and page 1, line 4, and insert page 1, line 13, delete consult, and insert collaborate.
Representative Erickson, does that
meet your intent?
That is
exactly what we've agreed upon. Yes.
And can you please, Representative Erickson, restate your... That would be the...
So I'm incorporating that change into my A5 amendment, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Is there any discussion? Seeing none, all in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, nay. Ayes have it. Representative Erickson, to your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This is a bill entitled, as amended, Innovative Delivery of Education.
Pardon me, Representative Erickson. I've been informed that now we've amended the amendment, and
so
we
now it has to be attached. Yes. So I will move the A5 amendment be adopted so that I have my bill in working order, my Senate File 946. Sorry.
Well, thank you. Is there any discussion? All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
All those opposed, nay. Ayes have it. And I'm learning why this is called an education committee. So, Representative Erickson, you can continue presenting your bill.
Well, I'm sorry, members, that this got so confusing, but I panicked when I came to committee and realized that the amendment didn't match up with the unofficial engrossment, so I set Ms. Larson scurrying, and so I appreciate her adjusting at the last minute, and then I was totally confused. So this is innovative delivery of educational services in a shared way. Is it necessary legislation? Probably not, but it's a signpost to tell two or more districts, or at least two districts, that they can collaborate on their educational services. And members, if you note the Senate file, you will see that the plan that has to be submitted to the Department of Education will provide collaboration on educational goals and objectives, strategies and processes to implement these goals and objectives, including a budget process with periodic expenditure reviews, valid and reliable measures to evaluate progress in realizing the goals and objectives, and implementation timeline, and other applicable conditions, regulations, responsibilities, duties, provisions, fee schedules, and legal considerations needed to fully implement the plan. And then I have gone on to make an adjustment in the next clause that the partnership may invite additional districts to join the partnership during the pilot project terms after notifying the commissioner and receiving approval. After notifying the commissioner. No, there doesn't have to be any approval. We're just going to notify the commissioner. And then breaking up clause E so that it's in two parts, and inserting that important language that Education Minnesota wanted, that this submission of application also be subject to employment agreements under Chapter 122A and Minnesota Statute Section 179A.20. And I'd like to get to explaining my bill further, but I think it's important that I point out some of these changes because, Mr. Chair, this has been a work in progress, and we've had many iterations, and I appreciate the input of the Department and Education Minnesota and the special stakeholders who have desired this opportunity to collaborate and work together. But we have changed the analysis in line 2.28 to an analysis of best practices that required by the commissioner. And we have removed in 2.16 the fact that the commissioner would have to check with her resources, her department staff and resources to select the 3 to 6 qualified applicants. So with that said, let me return to this is an opportunity for perhaps what some of you would call disruptive innovation. This has been a rather popular book in the last few years, and it is an opportunity to allow school districts to absolutely improve, raise achievement, improve learning, I think work with staffs, and I want all staffs included here, not just teachers, but paraprofessionals and others, who have probably unheard of ideas as to ways to more effectively deliver education for their particular needs. And we had in policy committee, a superintendent who is very interested in this and who I think very eloquently stated that they're waiting for a signal, even though they could do this on their own, but for a signal from us because we're always so controlling of their environment to be freed and to move forward with opportunities for their students. So with that said, Mr. Chair, I'll stand for questions because I have no testifiers, unless Ms. Dozlin wanted to come forward and address any issues.
Is there anyone in the audience who would like to testify for or against this bill? Please state your name for the record.
I'm getting good at testifying today. Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Valerie Dozeland, and I represent the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. I just wanted to clarify, there was an amendment that in the policy committee that was offered by Representative Dabney. Some of the components of that amendment was in the A5 amendment, and I have been in communications with Ann Allswager from Education Minnesota. She would like some further clarification, so we're just working out some of the kind of wordsmithing of that. That's why Representative Erickson is laying it over today until we could just work that out. But we have, I think, reached an agreement on some of the concerns that Education Minnesota raised. And we thank, again, Ms. Representative Erickson for her support and work on this and willingness to kind of help us solve the or address our concerns, their concerns, even though we aren't able to get that done today. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. McHenry?
Mr. Chair, members, Kevin McHenry, the Department of Education. I didn't really have to testify on this. I felt like I should just get up because I've been up on every other bill. But no, just joking. I appreciate what Representative Erickson has brought forward, and I appreciate working with her and the committee on this bill. One of the things that we did bring forward in the last committee, if you look at line 2.18, under the commissioner's role in subdivision 2, I think what we want to do is, and I think the goal is to foster as much collaboration and innovation as possible. There are other mechanisms in which districts can already do that. So this is just bringing another avenue to the table. But if it's going through the Department of Education, obviously there is a there's a way to review the applicants and ensure that we are providing the proper oversight if we are making approvals. We do this in other forms towards we're overseeing charter schools or online learning or other events. So I don't think that's something that's completely out of the ordinary in the role that the department plays. The one thing I did want to highlight here, as I did mention, line 2.18, is highlighting this on a first-come, first-served basis. I understand the motives behind that. The one issue that I raised in the last committee is that some districts that we would like to see collaborate more may not have as many of the resources as other districts. So some other smaller districts, possibly in maybe greater Minnesota, may not have the ability to put together in the quickest manner their proposals. And so some of the districts that may be larger with more resources may be able to get their plans to the department in a quicker manner. We think that it's in the best interest to make sure that if there's going to be some quality innovation and collaboration, that it happens throughout the state. And so we would recommend maybe a possibility of doing this on a geographic manner, or maybe that's something that can be outlined through the approval process. But we just wanted to put that one on the table for you all.
Thank you. Are there any questions from members? Representative Anderson.
Thanks, Mr. Chair. I too think this is a good bill. Just have a comment or a question on line 1.10. It almost sounds like today we don't allow groups of schools to work together, but that certainly is not the case.
Mr. Chair,
Representative Erickson,
and Representative, we certainly do allow them to work together. They have signaled to me that because we're such controllers of what they do, we need to give them a professional directive that they can. And hopefully this is more focused on educational programs and activities, so that as we see the waiver and all the flexibility that those schools are going to receive, that we can offer this opportunity to the rest of the schools. And I disagree when Mr. McHenry says that the first-come, first-served basis is not the best. I think we have smaller school districts out there who would like to work together, who would like to collaborate, who are ready because we're giving them until February 1 13 to get ready. So I think if we do the proper marketing, they're going to grab onto this, and there are ways that they can offer courses, for example, that maybe they can't by themselves. So
I think the motivator is who gets there first is going to be served first. Maybe not, you know, accepted first, but at least served first.
Mr. McHenry, did you have a comment? It's fine if you don't.
No, I just following up on that, Mr. Chair, members. Just following up, yeah, school districts can work together in a collaborative manner now. They also have an avenue of joint powers to move forward. So this would just, I think, be giving another option, as Representative Chair Erickson just mentioned.
Did you have a follow-up? Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And it's my question is along the lines of Representative Anderson. And, you know, this must be good bill day because I like this bill as well. And I guess what I'm hearing is that, yes, that there are, arrangements that can be currently made. So my question really had to do with, you know, is there anything in this bill that would disrupt any of those? I don't think there is. There's nothing here that would stop any of those other partnerships or arrangements that are going on already. Is that correct?
Mr. Chair, Representative Mariani, that is correct. I think with the ability for the forms or the pilots to be approved through the commissioner's office, it does give a avenue to check to make sure that there are no other implications from that. I think one of the discussions we did bring up in the policy committee is that if we're looking at a different type of delivery system, there are districts that already have certain things in place that they do need to follow if they're Title I schools. Districts that may have received QCOMP have to adhere to their QCOMP plan. Districts also have a staff development plan that they have to adhere to. So I think by going through this process is that, and trying to find a different way to collaborate or innovate, I think just going through the approval process is just making sure that those other requirements that districts have coming from a federal level or that have been coming from a state level are already, that they're adhering to those as well.
And Mr. Chair,
Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to quickly then comment, what I like about the bill is that it signals a very strong sense in the legislature around very important rigor issues here. I mean, they're spelled out here, both for students and for professional staff. It's clearly a strong, message from us about, encouraging relationships that expand opportunities in our state. And then also you've got the measurable, an expectation that there'd be measurable outcomes. So this isn't just fluff. Set some goals, some targets, and then measure against that. I think that's a really strong and wise posture on the part of the legislature.
Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and I apologize. I just walked in, and you may have covered some of this, and you can respond accordingly. I did walk in as the term joint powers was used in a sentence, and I'm not sure of the context. I think this is actually a question for the chair. I'd raised concerns in your committee, or to the author, I'd raised your concerns in your committee, Madam Chair, about an orderly process for teachers who may be working in these districts that combine, particularly if there's then some sort of joint powers where they are now employed by some other entity, the pilot project ends. And do we have an orderly process for them then returning to their original employment? You may recall when some of the service cooperatives were disbanded, educational cooperatives in the 90s, we had issues with kind of an orderly process in, orderly process out that respected the work that the teachers were doing and the job security piece. And so I guess, have we adequately covered that? Are we willing to work on that issue going forward?
Representative Erickson.
Well, my answer, Mr. Chair and Representative Dabney, would be that if that is an issue, I think Ms. Dozeland will remind you again that we're continuing to work with Education Minnesota. But because we have inserted on page 2, line 15, that these employees will be subject to the agreements in Minnesota Statutes Chapter 122 and Section 179A.20, that we probably can't get much more specific than that. and the partnerships. I think the beauty of the partnerships is that the collaboration is going to occur among all staff, not just school boards consulting, but they're going to collaborate to reach this plan that they want to submit.
Ms. Dolson, to this point.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Again, Valerie Doslin from the Minnesota Association of School Administrators. And the A5 amendment, which was adopted, does address some of the concerns that were raised by you yesterday, Representative Dabney, as well as Education Minnesota. Just because of the timing, we weren't able to continue to wordsmith to address the question that you posed today. Representative Erickson is going to just lay this over, and we will continue to talk with Education Minnesota and get the language that they have a comfort level with. Thank you. Intent is to try to address that question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you to both.
Then Representative Anzel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I really don't have strong feelings one way or the other about this, but I'm sure their superintendents and school board members and principals, building principals and teachers who are getting quite a chuckle out of this. And I think they'd say, you know, we pretty much can do this now. And in fact, I can tell you more and more districts in the forested region of the state are moving to do exactly this same collaboration, and I hope we don't throw up any barriers. And lastly, I was tweaked by two of your phrases. You said controlling of their environment and controllers of what they do. I certainly agree with that. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone in the audience who wishes to testify for or against this bill? Are there any additional members? Representative Anderson.
Thanks again, Mr. Chair. And I thought certainly you were going to bring this up, Representative Anzels. Page 2, line 10, could this be an instrument for schools to start before Labor Day and organize just for that purpose?
Mr. Chair and
Representative
Anderson, I don't think so. That would be one small part of it. But that certainly changing the school calendar is very important to I think, disruptive education because of the programming they may design. So it's not a carte blanche. This is only going to occur among those that put that in their application.
Any further questions? Seeing none, Representative Erickson, would you?
I'll renew my motion, Mr. Chair and members, that Senate File 946, as amended, be laid over for further work.
All those in?
No, we don't have to vote on that.
Chair lays over the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members.
Seeing no more business, we are now adjourned.